Valley 104.9 goes behind the scenes with former King County Councilperson Kathy Lambert every Tuesday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 6 p.m. as part of Valley 104.9's Community Talk and Info Sundays.
I'd like to thank you for joining us today on Valley Radio 104.9 Behind the Scenes with Kathy Lambert. And today we are honored to have a guest speaker to interview, and his name is Doug McCall, and he is with Search and Rescue. So welcome, Doug. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Kathy. It's great to be here.
So let's first start out with how long you have been with Search and Rescue, and which branch of Search and Rescue are you with?
Yeah, sure. So I joined Seattle Mountain Rescue in 2008, February, so 17 years so far. And as I said, with Seattle Mountain Rescue, which is the all-season technical, backcountry technical rescue team.
And what do you specifically do?
I am currently the president of Seattle Mountain Rescue, but I have held several different roles since joining the team.
Great. So tell us about what supplies you need, and also who purchases those for you?
Yeah, sure. So Seattle Mountain Rescue is like all of our SAR teams, are all volunteer and donor funded. Some of the equipment that we use specifically are technical ropes, rigging gear, equipment. We have ice screws, climbing equipment, equipment for snowshoes, backcountry travel, avalanche rescue. And then certainly medical equipment and some of the more recent advances, although maybe just in the last 5 years, we've been utilizing full body vacuum splints for subjects. And a full body vacuum splint is kind of like a beanbag that we can conform to a person's body. And then we use a pump to pull the air out of that beanbag, essentially. And then that molds to the person's body. So that's a really great tool for comfort, for spinal immobilization, for any long bone immobilization, and really helps provide a much safer transport for our subject. The challenge with those is when we send them to our subjects to the hospital, we rarely get those back. So we end up purchasing those pretty frequently.
And what would something like that cost?
That is $1,500 for one.
Oh my.
Yes, they're very expensive.
And who pays for those?
So our team pays for them. We have two on our team. Two full body vacuum splints in our equipment. If a full body vacuum splint gets damaged or lost, you know, if it goes to the hospital and we don't get it back, then we can submit it for a reimbursement to the State Department of Emergency Management, who will reimburse us for the loss of that equipment.
Great. But most of your supplies are self-funded, so you would buy your own ropes and such, is that true?
Yes, that's true. We work with our donors either on specific dedicated funds or general operating funds to operate our equipment. And this includes our rescue vehicles. We currently have one. We typically have two rescue vehicles, much like a fire department. We want a first out and a second out. There are times when we go to out of county missions. So we'll go to Mount Rainier National Park, North Cascades, or we'll do mutual aid to neighboring counties. And We will send a vehicle with all of our equipment, and then we need our second vehicle for any missions that happen in county. We had a 1996 vehicle that we were able to that we worked with Spokane Search and Rescue Team to sell them, and we're in the process of replacing our vehicle now, and we're actually in the process of a capital campaign to raise funds for that rescue truck.
So somebody wanted to help you, because you said donors, and sometimes people are like, well, do they have their own set of donors, or could anybody help? If somebody wanted to help you, that's hearing this, or how would they become a donor if they chose to do so?
Yeah, certainly. Anyone is welcome to donate. While certainly I would say donate to Seattle Mountain Rescue, I also would say that there are nine other teams in King County. And when I think of a donor and being an engaged donor in search and rescue, I think of wanting to associate with the things that I like to do. So I personally like to mountain climb and hike frequently. So I join Mountain Rescue and I donate to Mountain Rescue. The other teams that are there are King County Explorer Search and Rescue. They do a lot of they're the experts in trail rescue and also in urban search and rescue. If you are an avid hiker, King County Explorer Search and Rescue is a good place to go. Regional Special Vehicle Unit, they run at ATVs, and our King County 4x4 team, they run logistics and 4x4. There's a Ski Patrol Search and Rescue, a King County Dogs team, and Incident Support Team, who does a lot of our data and analytics. There's a horses team and a trackers team. So there's really in King County, there's lots of opportunity to donate to something that you're passionate about. Or certainly you can donate to King County Search and Rescue Association, which is the association of teams and can find a best location for those funds. If you want to donate to Seattle Mountain Rescue, seattlemountainrescue.org is our website. You can find King County Search and Rescue Association for a list of other teams to donate at the King County Search and Rescue Association site.
So, and having attended your 60th anniversary and being familiar with search and rescue, I think it's important for the citizens to know that you affiliate under the leadership of the King County Sheriff's Office. But as a council member in the past, when I realized that you don't get King County funding, I was very surprised and said, we only have 10 officers in the air support unit and six dedicated officers to rescue. So we have 16 paid employees. And the number I'll let you say because it's so huge, it's good for people to hear from you. How many volunteer members do you have?
In Seattle Mountain Rescue, we have about 90 volunteers. In King County Search and Rescue, in general, I think we have around 600 volunteers. And I like to think of how Seattle Mountain Rescue works is that we are an independent contractor of the King County Sheriff's Office, providing a service for $0. So we go out, we get dispatched essentially by the King County Sheriff if there's an injured hiker, injured climber, anyone needing assistance in the backcountry, or even urban searches for potentially Alzheimer's walkaways or searches for youth. We've done all sorts of searches in the past. Our volunteers respond and we essentially answer the call. And every volunteer who volunteers with King County Search and Rescue, this is what we love doing. We spend our weekends training for this. We spend our weekends responding, and this is essentially it's a hobby for many people, but it's a passion, more importantly, for I think almost all the volunteers in King County.
Well, it is clear that it's a passion, and I have had several occasions, as I did at your 60th anniversary, to realize something had happened. And I asked, what's just happened? And they said, we have a woman and her dog that is in the river that needs to be rescued. And it was just instantaneous that it was like people had extrasensory perception, something was up, and the right people were off in the corner and ready to mobilize. And just such a quick amount of time. And then they got the call that the woman had self-rescued. And so then everybody came back in again. But the synchronization and the seriousness and just the love of wanting to help was so evident. And that's why I asked, because I could see it happening. And so it's very clear that there is a passion for doing this. And I know that there are so many people every year that are thankful that you have this passion to help other people and to do the kind of training that you do, especially being volunteer. So, what type of training do you go through for this?
Sure. So, in Seattle Mountain Rescue, we come to the organization as experienced alpinists. So, what that means is when you apply to Seattle Mountain Rescue, you have to have a minimum of 3 years of alpine climbing, 3 years of snow and ice travel. And 3 years of rock climbing. And that provides, a core foundation for ability to move in technical terrain and to do so safely, as well as a mountaineering sense of understanding the backcountry, the weather changes, and being able to effectively move with confidence in the backcountry. Other training that we do, so every year we require each of our members to do a minimum of 16 hours of rigging, another 4 hours of snow training, and then 8 hours of medical training. Those are our minimums. Most of our members are well beyond those trainings, and we generally do one or two major trainings a month, as well as every other week we're training in the evenings.
I was talking to your executive director, and she said that they had 49,000 hours of training and rescue last year. That is a lot of hours. And the idea that, many people have said, well, we have all these, rescue people that work for the county. And I have to remind them, no, only 16 work for the county, 600 volunteer. So, when you see that one or two trucks that say, King County Search and Rescue, most likely that is a volunteer truck going out. And so it's pretty impressive that you are doing that. And we aren't going to get into it in this call, but I do know that for many years you've been looking for a stable headquarters. And I hope that that comes to fruition as quickly as possible, because having all your gear in a place where it's easily accessible is really, really important. So I just want the listeners to realize how blessed we are that you are willing to spend your weekends and that you have the passion to do this. So, what rescue would you say was the one you remember the most, and why?
Yeah, let's see. I've been thinking about this when I read the questions, and the one that I think about most recently, I think, is actually the one that is pictured behind me, which I'm sure listeners can't see, but this was a rescue on the Tooth, which is a popular climb in the Snoqualmie Pass area. And in this particular event, a climber had fallen off of the first pitch and sustained some injuries. So we responded as our rescue team. And I'll show you, but I'll describe to the listeners what we're seeing is there's a rock face, an alpine rock face, and there are, let's see, about 6 to 7 rescuers. They're pretty much all huddled around this subject, which you can't see in the picture. We're wearing our technical climbing gear, helmets. We're all tied into the rock. We're all tied together, and we're all working in concert together. And I think, with Shadow Mountain Rescue, that's one of the things that we do as alpinists is being comfortable in this terrain. What we can't see in the picture and trying to envision it as a listener is we're essentially on a ledge on the side of a rock face mountain where we have one person who landed on this ledge, who is the climber, and then we have 6 other people, very close, very tight conditions, and working together to stabilize the subject, to make sure they are secured to the wall. They're not going to go anywhere, and then getting the subject. In this case, the subject was helicoptered by Snohomish County helicopter. To Harborview. And yeah, it was I think it's memorable because it shows in my mind it's memorable because it's the power of our team and our team working together. And where it's kind of a state of flow that you hear about either in work environments or climbing or that you get into that things just work. We're handing carabiners over to each other. We're handing medical equipment. We're treating the patient. And it's just a really magical state of flow where everyone is working to help this one individual. So I think that's the most memorable to me in recent history, recent past. And certainly, while these were mountain rescuers in my mind in this location, this rescue was also supported by King County Explorer Search and Rescue and 4x4 team, and it all these pieces come together to really make these rescues happen.
So I see that they have some equipment on, and I've seen some of your packs. What is kind of the average weight of what you're carrying in if you're bringing in all these different supplies?
Sure. So my base pack, just with my own personal gear, what I call my rescue pack, before I even leave, before I put any other additional equipment on, is about 20 pounds. And so then we'll put in group gear on top of that. So that might be a rope, a rigging kit, a litter, which is what we carry people out on. And that's going to add another 20, 15, 20, probably another 20 pounds usually. So packs are generally probably anywhere between 30 and 40 pounds as we hike in.
So that's a lot of weight, more than my purse. And I know that my purse sometimes pulls me off balance.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of weight to be carrying. So not only do you have to be physically fit in your own body, but then having all that weight on top of it is pretty impressive. So I know that one of the ladies that is on the advisory board who has been very vocal about this, and she is very active and owns a Subaru dealership. And she has been very open about what it was as her experience in having been rescued, thinking I'm going out and just going for a nice hike and then needing to be rescued. And I know I was out with some of your team one day and they said, stop, we want to look at those two people going up the mountain. And I said, What brought your attention to them? And they said they were wearing flip-flops. They had no supplies with them. They had only a very light sweater. They were going up in elevation, which means it's going to get colder. And they were going in a place where they explained to me there is a fork in the road, and sometimes people take the wrong fork and end up in a place that's very difficult to rescue them. And so they wanted to put in their minds what these people look like. So should they get a call later on, they had a direction of, okay, these people are really unprepared. And so I'm going to need to have extra equipment to deal with the fact that they don't have anything on their own preparations. So I think it's really important to be aware when you're going out. And one of the things too that I think is really important is that lots of people think, well, I'm just going to go on a hike and so I'll bring my cell phone because my cell phone will give me GPS. And I'm like, yeah, so that won't be working very well. So I know they were teasing me one day when I was going for a hike. What is your cell phone carrier so that we can triangulate specifically off of those when you get lost? Lots of confidence there. So anyway, I think it's important for people to know that you don't expect there are places where the cell will work, but probably not. So what would you say about that?
So certainly a cell phone in the last 10 years has just been it's been very useful. It's a great tool to bring, but it's just one of the tools that people can consider because there's so many places that do not have cell coverage. Some of that may be changing in the next 5 years. But what I would want to convey to listeners is that search and rescue services are not like urban fire department responses. So if I call the fire department from my home, I know the Snoqualmie Fire Department is going to be in my house within probably 4 to 7 minutes, probably closer to four. In the backcountry environment, one of the things as that we're trying to consolidate is the response times. And but in that, if a hiker thinks about, okay, when I got up this morning, I had breakfast and then I drove to the trailhead. So from wherever they're starting, they drove, however long. Assuming from Seattle, most of our volunteers are in the Seattle area. Then, how long did it take for you to hike to your location to get there? So, if it takes on average maybe 30, 45 minutes to drive to the trailhead and then maybe another hour, things to consider are that's the minimum amount of time it's going to take for us to get to you. Sometimes we can be very fast and get there quickly, depending on where our members are and happen to be. So what I think listeners should take away from this is be prepared. Be prepared to wait. If you're working hard and sweating, you're going to get cold. Maybe, bring those extra clothes, bring a puffy jacket. If the weather conditions are inclement, certainly have a jacket to help keep you out of the environment, out of the weather. And then always having that extra first aid kit is certainly important to, be able to treat or stop any major bleeding that might be happening. And but I think being ready to wait, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Because as much as we want to have a 4 minute response, the backcountry is big and can take time for us to access you, even if we're getting a helicopter.
We will talk about helicopters too, because that's near and dear to my heart. But it's really important, as you say, for people to understand that the cell sites are intermittent. And I remember that when we did the last cell tower contract, they showed a map of where good coverage was, what kind of good coverage is, and where no coverage is. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me, because so much of the third district, which is the Snoqualmie Valley and the wilderness areas, had no coverage. And I was like, no, we can't do this. If we're going to have a new contract, then we need to make sure that these areas, because they are so popular, and we do want people to be using this and to get physically strong. And so when they did the final plan, many more parts now have cell coverage. So when you said 5 years from now, I'm smiling, thinking that's when the next contract comes up. And so it will be very good to see if we can, now that we have some of it in, how do we fill in so that it will be better? But even if we do get that, because of the terrain and sound waves, there will still be places that won't be able to get cell coverage. And so I think it's important for people to bring the tool, but not think for sure that I'm going to get my 4 minute response because I called 911. That's just not going to happen. So I'm glad you pointed that out. You mentioned the helicopter, and as I said, that was important to me because I worked on the helicopter issue. And when we had a flood in Duval many years ago, and it was flooded for several weeks, we went out in the helicopter, the sheriff's helicopter, and a very old helicopter that we had surplus from the army. And I looked around and said, "Where would you land this?" And they said, "We don't have any place to land. It's all wet." And so I said, "Well, how would you rescue people?" And they said, "Well, we wouldn't because we don't have a hoist." And so I'm like, "Oh, you need a hoist." And so that's how the Lambert lift became the hoist that. And I was in the helicopter when they were doing their final drill, which was very exciting. And then shortly thereafter, I got a beautiful letter from a grandma whose grandson had been rescued. And even my whole staff was like, "Oh, that's so amazing." I mean, they were so happy that this beautiful letter came that, there had been this rescue. And so it really means a lot, and it means a lot for you to have good supplies. And so at your 60th anniversary, they told me that the county has now bought a new helicopter, not a surplus, not one that we had to buy another helicopter to take the parts off to keep this part going, but a real new helicopter. So they also told me that there's about four rescue helicopters that are not military in the state. Is that about right?
That are not military.
Yeah.
I believe that is the case. And Snohomish, King County, and Spokane County are the three that immediately come to mind, but I'm not sure about the fourth.
So whatever the number is, and I think it is that number, or approximately that number anyway, it's not a lot. And so when people
It's
think
not.
we have a whole fleet, well, there's 20 of them, and they're going to just fly out of here, and they're going to fly over there. That is not accurate. There are very few. And so, go ahead.
One thing that I find striking. So we had talked a little bit about our Seattle Mountain Rescue's connection with the Austrian Mountain Rescue team. They in the Tyrol region, which is about the size of King County, they have 17 helicopters. They're all paid and staffed, and they also charge for rescue, which is not something that we as volunteers we do not advocate for. We want people to call for rescue and know that they're not going to get a bill from Seattle Mountain Rescue, King County Search and Rescue, because we want people to feel comfortable calling, and we will come anytime. But the difference also between Austria and here is they run about 3,500 rescues a year. And Seattle or in King County, we are about 120 to 150 rescues a year. And I believe that's mainly because of the population density within the mountains and the number of tourists that go to the Tyrol region. Our friends often say there are some lots of we rescue lots of Germans who come to
And
visit.
We rescue lots of people from other counties that come to visit too.
Right.
And that takes us up to the idea that there's a bill before the legislature right now, and it is House Bill 1969. And it is a very important bill in that it is a means by which, when King County goes to other counties to help, and you mentioned earlier that we get called out a lot, that it would be a fund that King County then could be reimbursed for having our helicopter go there. And I met with the prime sponsor, Brian Burnett, out of our area, the 12th district. And so, for those of us that live in the area, having this really important bill run by one of our own representatives is very exciting. So, if you think that it's a good idea for the state to have a fund where we could be reimbursed when we help other people, HB 1969, and you can call the legislative hotline 1-800-562-6000 and tell them that you really like, and that means pro, 1969 on their form.
Kathy will be back next week for the next part of this discussion right here on Valley 104.9.